what's going on? Happy Sunday. Happy Easter. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. We're coming up in just a bit. Myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds live on YouTube. But first, let's recap the game on Saturday. There was quite a bit that happened in this one. Reds taking on the Nationals, game two of the 2024 season. It was Hunter Green for the Reds up against Patrick Corbin of the Nationals. The Reds nearly scored the first run of the game in the bottom of the second inning. Santiago Espinal singled in his very first at-bat with the Reds. Espinal then stole second base, but was gunned out at home plate by none other than Jesse Winker. Jesse Winker threw out Espinal on a single that was smoked off the bat of Stuart Fairchild. Well, Hunter Green had looked really sharp through the first three innings, but in the top of the fourth, he walked Jesse Winker on five pitches to lead off the inning. None of the pitches were anywhere close to the strike zone. He gave up a double to Joey Meneses, which was the hardest hit ball the entire game at 114 off the bat. Green did rebound. He struck out Joey Gallo looking. Then he got Keibert Ruiz to hit a weak pop fly that unfortunately kind of got into no man's land between Elly De La Cruz and Stuart Fairchild. Fairchild playing center field on Saturday. The ball dropped, and it was 1-0 Nationals. The Reds did get that run back when Jamer Candelario made his first hit as a Red count. He turned on an inside fastball, pulled it out of the park to tie the game up at one. But then in the top of the fifth, Hunter Green got a ground out, but then he walked two batters. Jesse Winker smoked a ball that bounced off Hunter Green's glove. Might have actually been a double play if he had let that ball go, but nonetheless, that loaded the bases. Then a weak sack fly by Joey Meneses put the Nats up 2-1. Some thought Stuart Fairchild might have thought in his head that it was the third out because he kind of casually caught the ball and then lobbed it in to the cutoff man instead of trying to fire home. He probably would not have got the speedy C.J. Abrams either way, though. But nonetheless, Green's day was done. Justin Wilson came in, and he was able to get the final out of the inning. Hunter Green's final line on Saturday, 4 2/3 innings pitched, 5 hits, 2 earned runs, 4 walks, and 7 strikeouts. The bottom of the fifth, the Reds responded once again. Elly De La Cruz singled, but then he was caught stealing on an overslide where he came off the bag for just a split second. Stuart Fairchild then singled, and then Luke Maley hit a 2-run home run to right center field to put the Reds up 3-2. Will Benson, he got the start in right field against a left-handed pitcher on Saturday, and he made it count. He crushed a double to right field at 109 off the bat. In fact, that was the hardest hit ball of his young career. Jonathan India then singled Benson home, put the Reds up 4-2. Justin Wilson got 2 outs in the sixth. Fernando Cruz got a strikeout swinging to end that inning. Cruz came back out in the top of the seventh. He gave up a leadoff triple to C.J. Abrams when Will Benson kind of misplayed the carom a bit in right field. Not sure if he would have had a double or a triple either way. Abrams, of course, is very fast. Cruz then threw a wild pitch, and that made it a 4-3 game. But then Cruz really did respond. He struck out each of the next three batters, 4 total strikeouts for Cruz on Saturday. The game stayed at 4-3 going into the top of the eighth. Lucas Semmes came in. He struck out Joey Gallo, but then he gave up a solo home run to Keibert Ruiz to tie it at 4. Not a cheap home run either. 106.8 off the bat, went 397 feet. In the bottom of the eighth, game tied at 4. Jonathan India was DHing on Saturday. He led off with a single. Bubba Thompson came in to pinch run for India. Bubba stole second base. Steer and CES both grounded out, but then Jamer Candelario walked, and then Nick Martini, pinch hitting for Santiago Espinal, smoked a double down the right field line, putting the Reds up 4-2. Looked like it was all Reds and another big moment for Nick Martini. In the top of the ninth, David Bell moved Steer from the outfield to second base. Of course, Espinal had left the game, who started the game at second base. David Bell elected to bring in Jake Fraley to play in the outfield instead of just letting Martini stay in the game. More on that in a bit. David Bell turned to his closer in the ninth. You might remember Alexis Diaz started the year off last year with 22 straight saves, and he didn't blow a save until June 30th. Diaz led off the inning on Saturday with a walk to C.J. Abrams. Now, if there was the automated ball strike system and that was in effect, 3 of those 4 pitches would have been strikes, but in fairness, they were all borderline pitches to C.B. Buckner, the home plate umpire on Saturday. Alexis Diaz struck out arguably the Nats' best player in Lane Thomas on four pitches, but then Abrams stole second base, then Winker crushed a single 105 off the bat. That made it a 6-5 game. Joey Meneses then singled on a slider out of the strike zone that he hit into the ground, but it went right past the shifted Ellie De La Cruz. You'll hear more about that from Trace in a bit. And then the wheels just really fell off for Diaz. He walked Joey Gallo on four pitches to load the bases. Then he hit Caper Ruiz with a pitch, tied the ballgame up at six, and Diaz's day was done. Brett Suter came in. He made the best of it. He made a pretty good pitch to Eddie Rosario, but Rosario was able to just hit the ball far enough for a sac fly to put the Nats up 7-6. He then got a weak ground out to end the threat there. We moved to the bottom of the ninth. Stuart Fairchild led off. He popped out. Luke Maley drew a 10-pitch walk off Nats closer Kyle Finnegan. Will Benson struck out, and then Bell decided to bring in Tyler Stevenson to pinch hit for the DH, Bubba Thompson, who had replaced India. You would have obviously liked to have saw Fraley hit some point in that inning, being probably Brett's best hitter against right-handed pitching, but he, of course, had replaced Martini. It was much further down in the lineup. Tyler Stevenson hit a soft ground out, and he was just barely out by half step to end the game. Reds lose 7-6 in a wild one, and they fall to 1-1 on the young season. Here's what Alexis Diaz had to say. This is via translator Jorge Merlis.
I lost the zone. I lost the zone pretty much. I mean, the first batter, there were calls that weren't called, or there were balls that weren't called, and you know that's all part of the game. But the second batter, I got out, got him out. But after that, I just lost complete control of the zone.
And here was David Bell's post-game comments.
With Alexis, I don't know if his carryover from the spring didn't have a tremendous spring. Not sure we've seen him that off as he was there in the ninth. What are you seeing from him right now?
First time out. He wasn't as sharp as we've seen him at times. And he got off to a tough start. I thought the pitches were close, but you know the walks are something that we know that walks can lead to runs. So I think it was just a matter of Alexis getting settled in here, and he's going to be fine. He's been outstanding for us for a long time in those situations. So I know he'll be anxious to get back out there.
Only the second game, as you said, but is there some defensive lapses or even communication that you've got to iron out?
Yeah, I mean, the defense, probably the best way to sum it up is there was a few plays today, several plays that we typically make and we will make moving forward.
Your impressions of Hunter today?
Really good. Great fastball. Mixed in his other pitches when he needed to. If there's any critique, it's through a lot of pitches to get it done, but sometimes that's what it takes. He did what he had to do to put us in a great position to win the game.
Here's what Hunter Green had to say about his first start of the season.
Felt great. Towards the end, I just got a little jumpy, I felt like. I know better this time where I got to be able to check myself and stay within myself and just make pitches. But overall, it felt really good.
Did you feel good about the pitch mix, especially early on? It seemed like you were unpredictable, at least early on.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously these guys swing a lot, and being able to use that to my advantage with, if they're ready for the fastball, being able to mix it up with the off speed. I felt like Luke and I were on the same page. Luke called a great game and was able to, have a good pitch mix altogether.
Were you making a conscious effort? You had a lot of fastballs that were in, up and in as well. Was that something conscious that you were out to do today?
Yeah, knowing who I am as a pitcher and being able to embrace that and bear down on those strengths. And I feel like no matter who the team is, that's something that I'll never, back away from. So, I feel like I was able to get in there when I needed to and get the ball up.
How were they able to drive the pitch count up, Hunter?
Say that one more time.
How were they able to drive the pitch count up to about 100?
obviously there's times where I didn't make pitches, but, not to throw the team under the bus, but there was some stuff behind me that, happened. Obviously they were able to come back and still hit a lot of emotion in the game today, but stuff, that I couldn't control as well. So I think that added a little bit to it as well.
You said you got a little bit jumpy. Can you put your finger on what might have triggered that?
I had so much adrenaline, with my legs. Like I kind of didn't really feel my legs. It was funny. I was talking to Frankie about this, and he kind of felt the same way. Just kind of that first game. So compensating a little bit with my upper half and kind of spinning a little bit. So yeah.
How encouraging was that
ball flow
display at the end of the second?
It's fantastic. I have a lot of confidence in that pitch and looking forward to being able to get results like that throughout the rest of the season.
And lastly, here was Luke Maley postgame.
Obviously a tough one to swallow today. What, in your eyes, was so off with Alexis there in the ninth?
I thought he got squeezed a little bit early on, and basically he made decent pitches. They just made better swings. It's just as simple as that. You know, we kind of got ourselves a little behind the eight ball with some traffic, and he had to be careful to certain guys, and that sort of compounded it. But he looks fine. His stuff's good. It's kind of a blip on the radar as far as I'm concerned with him.
Do you feel like some of the just a little messy of a game in general, just some of the defensive lapses and things like that?
Yeah. Just, you know, you can't give away the amount of outs that we gave away today. We know that. I mean, it is part of it for sure. There's no way about it. Like, eventually you're going to find yourself in a really tough spot if you keep giving them extra chances. And I thought, especially the way Hunter threw the ball today, he deserved better. That's how it goes sometimes. We've all been there. It's going to happen. That's what you see is what you get with something like that.
Which that kind of underscores maybe a couple of guys are missing too.
I mean, I don't think it really does. I mean, I think the fact of the matter is it was super windy and some balls got away from us. I think that if you want to maybe dissect it from a communication aspect, you know, maybe I'm not out there, but I frankly really doubt it. I think it's just these things happen sometimes.
Lucas just missed on the Ruiz home run.
Wasn't a terrible pitch. Obviously, he'd like to get it in there just a little bit more, but Ruiz is swinging the bat well, man. I mean, you always want to kind of second guess yourself, but I mean, he's put some really good at bats together the first couple games of the year.
Back to Alexis, you get a feel for like his mentality is at right now from off tough spring and then with today?
Yeah, he'll be fine. You know, we'll obviously talk about it from just like the mechanical side of things and try and get him tightened up. But he's a pro, and I mean that's why he's our closer. Is he understands that heavy is the head sometimes in the back end of the bullpen. He understands that, and he'll bounce back.
You had obviously a really good offensive spring, the home run, the really good bat in the ninth inning. When you're going well, what are you doing well?
Nothing fancy. Just really bearing down and trying to see the ball as good as I can. I think some power has come out, and I've gotten asked a lot about like if I'm taking chances or trying to catch it up front. I'm really not. I mean, I'm trying to bear down and put together good at bats, and I've been able to get the ball in the air the first month of games or so, including spring.
Well, our DSC deep drive of the game was Jamer Candelario's first home run with the Reds. It was the longest ball hit of the day by a Red at 379 feet. And our deep drive of the day is sponsored by Deep South Commodities. DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production, specializing in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks, as always, to our friends at DSC. Well, the Pirates, Brewers, and Cardinals all won on Saturday. The Cubs got blasted 11-2 by the Rangers. So through a couple days of the baseball season, Pirates started out 3-0 in the NL Central. Brewers are also, they're 2-0. Reds sit at 1-1. Cardinals 1-2. And the Cubs holding up the rear at 0-2. All right, well, here is myself and Trace Fowler with some instant post-game reaction from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube.
Welcome into Chatterbox Reds, a losing edition, Nick. First one of the season. Turns out the Reds aren't going to go 162-0. But I got to be honest, I'd be lying if I didn't think they were going to start 2-0 about 45 minutes ago. They lose 7-6. I guess first I'll do what I always do. I'll ask you how you're doing. You're probably like me, not doing great.
Yeah, it's an ugly baseball game. You're kind of thinking, no, they're going to find a way just to win in this game that's kind of gross, but you find a way to win. And then Lucas Sims gave up a home run. To Lucas Sims' credit, he didn't walk anyone. Alexis Diaz actually really just hurt himself. So not what you want to see from the back end of your bullpen. Lexus was as good as he could be early in the year last year, and right off the bat struggles after a rough spring.
It stinks because it kind of felt like we were, and listen, it's just one game. Let me start by saying that. But it starts to feel like it was a trend, and it felt like something we started to feel towards the end of last season. And you start to question, listen, Diaz does not throw a ton of strikes. Will that ever catch up to him? It seems like it's going to catch up to him at some point, and it caught up to him today. I will say, I'm going to give him an asterisk. I'm not going to belabor over this. I'm not going to harp on it a bunch. I don't want to be that guy all the time. I'm not even really here to say, like I told you so. There's a whole season to go. Maybe it'll work out in the opposite favor at some point. But he did get a weak ground ball that was rolled over on that you would traditionally see a double play on. If that was a double play, guess what? We'd all be happy and we'd be talking about how the team's great and Alexis Diaz is fine. Yeah, he struggled, but he got out of it. You know, that's what he always does. So I just want to put that asterisk in there, but there's no doubt there's more to this game than just the ninth. But let's face it, you have a job on a team to close games out. And when it's a two-run lead against a team as bad as the Nationals, you should convert that. Obviously, they're human, but this one's going to sting for a little while.
Yeah. I don't think we should make too much out of Diaz, but there was plenty of signs to be concerned about Diaz before. We shouldn't make too much about this individual game. Right. Like you said, I mean, it's a game of inches, and you have a totally different narrative if you get that ground ball. But there was plenty of concerning things with Alexis Diaz before the first pitch today.
Yeah, and listen, I know people are going to complain about C.B. Buckner. He was bad. We all know he was bad, but he was bad for both sides. So I can't sit here and suggest that's the only reason. I also thought, you know, to stay on that mojo a little bit, I thought Ellie was safe earlier in the game on the steal. Yeah, but we all know how that goes. If it's even remotely close, the call's going to stand. So I knew that already going into the replay. That's where we're at.
I was thinking back to last year when I was looking for tickets for opening day for the Reds and just how difficult it was to not only find tickets, but find them at a decent price without a bunch of crazy hidden fees. Well, the Game Time app is now an authorized ticket marketplace for MLB, which actually makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to first pitch. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and the lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. My personal favorite feature of the Game Time app is their seat layout. It shows you exactly the price around the stadium in each section in a very clean, user-friendly way. They have all-in pricing. Toggling this feature shows the total up front with no surprise fees at checkout. The lowest price guaranteed, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app today, create an account, and use the code CINCY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y, for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
All right, let's get into it. The main talk, most likely, and I think it's justified, as it should be, around this game is going to be Alexis Diaz and what we make of it. Listen, I know people are going to try to crush David Bell for this. If you want to say that he left Bell, or Bell gave Diaz too much time to sit in there, maybe. But here's the problem with that, is that you have a guy that has shown the same type of song and dance before. Diaz has walked guys before, and then he gets himself out of trouble, and he's done that for such a long time and been successful at it that you can't, David Bell, you can't expect him, in my opinion, the first time out, to not at least show some confidence to Diaz. Now, listen, if we want to get upset and he continues to run Diaz out there and this happens time and time and time again, then I think that there's some merit to the idea of getting on Bell. But I'll be honest, Diaz has to do his job. Like, that's his job. And if you want to blame somebody and it makes you feel better, I don't think there's anywhere else to blame if you're going to try to blame Bell versus Diaz than Diaz. He's got to throw strikes. And as I said before, maybe a little bit of bad luck because he got a rolled over ground ball. But again, like, this was our concern all along with Alexis Diaz. At some point, major leagues are going to catch up to you, and you're not going to keep being able to dance around the fire and not get burnt if you continue to walk guys. Like, and he has consistently done this now, at least probably since what dating back to a couple weeks after the All-Star break last year. I mean, you can even say his career, maybe, but I don't know how far you want to go back. I'm just trying to be somewhat. I don't want to kill Diaz too much. He's been a good arm. He's been a fantastic arm out of the bullpen. He's been a good closer. He's a young player. Well, let's face it. Today, he just didn't get the job done.
Well, to your point about how, you know, you have to leave him in because he's been able to get out of jams before, and you have to show some confidence on him on opening day. Alexis Diaz did not blow his first save until June 30th last year. So I pulled up the game logs from the start of the season till June 30th. He was still walking 4.9 batters per nine innings, even during that span where he didn't blow a single save. So walks have always been a problem. He has been able to get out of it a lot of times. It's hard to know. Will he be able to do it? I mean, there's a lot of closers that have been able to do it. There's a lot of closers that eventually caught up with them. It's really hard to project which way it goes with him. But you were hoping. He had a really bad spring. The easy talking point is, well, you know, closers need the adrenaline, and when the lights come on, it'll be fine. Well, number one, it didn't work. Have to see a little bit more. But look, there's a lot of really good arms in this bullpen. So it's a fine line of being patient and trusting your guys, your all-star closer last year versus a guy like Fernando Cruz. I know he gave up a run today, but my God, he looked really, really good today as well.
Yeah, I mean, give Suter some credit as well. I don't want to blow past him. I know we're probably going to move on to some other topics of conversation. His name probably won't get brought up after this, but he came in and did as good of a job as he possibly could have. You couple that with the fact of what he did on opening day, and you never know. Maybe he's a guy that you didn't know what you had when you brought him in. He kind of felt like a good hometown addition type piece and more of a veteran arm in the bullpen, and all of a sudden he becomes the guy. I don't know. But right now, certainly, the confidence that we have in Diaz when he comes out of the pen is not going to be nowhere near as high as it used to be, rightfully so. And it'll be interesting to see how Bell handles that moving forward. Because I do think that there's some people that right now are frustrated because Bell left him in as long as he did. Because it does look like, you could have argued, Nick, all right, he doesn't have it. He's all over the place. This isn't going to get figured out. Let's see if we can't try to save him before he's completely drowned. The issue I have is that he's just found a way to Houdini act this before, and you got to give him the chance to basically bury himself before we decide to bury him per se. All right, moving forward here, you have Green on here, you have Bad D together. I think that goes hand in hand. Again, for those that didn't get a chance to listen before the game ended, I didn't get a chance to watch a ton of Hunter throw. I did get a chance to see the inning in which, you know, we were basically dropping pop-ups there in short center field. And I thought he did an excellent job of not letting that rattle him and making good pitches of damage control in that inning, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, overall, it wasn't a performance that you're going to put on his career highlights, but I thought he was fine. If he had some better defense behind him, he probably gets through maybe six innings, at least more than 4 2/3. Interesting thing with Green today is he threw his slider 51 times, right. Threw his four-seam fastball 43 times, threw his splitter only six times, and we didn't see anything else. So, but he was really effective. If there's something you want to be mad about David Bell on, this is there's two things that stand out to me, and I'm kind of jumping, but it kind of goes hand in hand with where we're at. The first is, I think Bubba Thompson should have been playing center field today. I know Will Benson had got on base twice and did have the hardest hit ball he's ever hit of his career against Patrick Corbin. But defense matters, and this team is just, it feels like they are just completely throwing defense to the wayside because they're down McClain and Friedel. And I don't agree with that. I think Bubba Thompson should have been center field. I think Bubba Thompson makes that catch, and you put Stuart Fairchild in right field, and you put Stuart Fairchild in a position he's going to be better at as well. And then the other thing was Jake Fraley. I don't understand the usage there. You brought in Nick Martini to pinch hit. Is Nick Martini that bad in the outfield that that he couldn't go out for an inning, because then you don't have Jake Frehley. Jake Frehley never got an at bat in this game, and you were in the ninth inning in a one run game, and against a right handed pitcher, and you didn't have your best bat against right handed pitching.
Yeah, no, that's a more than a fair point. I seen the play we're talking about right now, and people are going to hate me for saying this. I just don't know who. I don't know if there's a ton of blame to go around on a ball like that. I know people are going to crush me for saying that. I would love in a perfect world, Stuart Fairchild to be racing in, calling everybody off, making the catch. But if we're being honest as well, I think Stuart was under the impression, and rightfully so, maybe. I'm just trying to play this out. Ellie has an unbelievable arm. It kind of looked like Ellie was probably going to get under that ball, but I think Ellie kind of misread how far it was going to drift back into the outfield, and he just never got a chance to sprint back there and get underneath it. In a perfect world, though, to be very clear, Stewart comes up and he makes that catch, but I don't know if it's like you can crush any of them, if that makes sense. I think that there's reasonable rationale on all the fronts of why everybody acted the way they did. And it's just an unfortunate thing that happened. And we've talked about this before. I mean, our defense is terrible out there. I don't know how else to say it. It's just bad. Like TJ Friedl going down. And I'm not trying to be like super toxic today, okay? I'm it's one game, but like when you lose Matt McClain and you lose TJ Friedl, this is what you get. This is what you get. You got a second baseman out there with a head up his who decides he's just going to play La La Land. Ball's landing right in front of second base, and Espinal's just staring at CES. CES is like 240 pounds, bro. You're out there. If you weigh 150 pounds and you play the infield, you don't look over at the guy that weighs 250 pounds to make the play. Ever. You don't do that. That's like the point guard catching a rebound and outletting it right to the guy that's 6'9". Like, you just use your brain. You got put in the lineup today, Espinal, just so you know, because you play defense, brother. I don't know. It's only one game. But when you don't have Matt McClain and you don't have TJ Friedl, this is what we're exposed to. And there was so many things that happened today. And my God, I missed like three or four innings. Who knows what I missed? I don't even know. Like, I could have missed other things. But the baseball that I seen today, they didn't deserve to win. And in fact, if you want an optimistic output on today's game, is that, you know, when you leave the ball yard, sometimes you're like, you know, we played really well. The Braves series per se, right? Like last year, you lose two out of three games, Nick, and you leave the park every day when you lost and you think, damn, we played great. We just lost. Today, at least you know you don't have to feel that way. You can almost look around at everybody and think, well, they could have done something better. It was that bad, but I digress. I'm not trying to get this upset on game two of 162, to be clear. But I also know what's coming around in May. And I'm not trying to get ahead of ourselves, but I know what the gauntlet looks like in May. I'm trying to stack up the wins here so we can possibly, you know, give ourselves some wiggle room for error in May. But otherwise, do you have anything else to add on the? I mean, Hunter Green, you got to see him throw more or less. People are still in the chat saying he's not elite. Do you make anything of that?
He walked too many guys today. I mean, you don't want to see him ever walk four guys. I mean, other than that, other than a couple bad walks, there was one leadoff walk that I think came around to score, and that one really, really hurt. Other than that, I thought he threw the ball pretty well. Seven strikeouts. It's really hard to judge a start like this when there was such bad defense behind him. When he goes another inning and a half, the line looks completely different, and there's not a single person complaining about Hunter Green. So it's just the defense is terrible. It was my biggest concern coming into the year. This was like my nightmare. I thought, thank God it didn't happen on opening day when everyone's eyeballs are on the red.
Good thing we could hide this thing behind Bally Sports. Golly, yeah, imagine this being on WLWT, this joke of a game. Yeah. Good God. Good thing we can hide it behind all the cable packages. I don't know. Not to cut you off, but you make a good point.
Hopefully it just isn't going to really kill this team. You know it's going to hurt the team, but how much is it going to hurt the team? It's hard to know because you know, defense is one of those things where it's all about the opportunities. And, you know, you can hide really bad defenses for a couple weeks. Yeah. And it doesn't. It can all come roaring in one or two games. It's so much is could, you know, dependent on,
right,
you know, where the balls are hit and all those kind of things. So,
yeah.
It's definitely a concern. You just have to hope and pray that you're able to find until TJ Friedel gets in there more. But I do think if your defense is this bad, you got to play like guys like Bubba Thompson and probably even Santiago Espinal more at second base, even as bad as he looked today. He's not a bad defender. He just had a really bad day.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, the unfortunate part is, again, we don't get these guys for their entire career. We get them for, you know, 4 or 5 months out of their entire career. We'll see how long Espinal is around. We'll find out. All right, on to some better news, I guess. Martini, Candy, Maley. Martini, let's not look over it. A big-time hit. A big-time hit. Drove in two on a triple there in the bottom of the eighth inning. You thought that was kind of the Martini kiss, and he was going to be 2 for 2 on Reds victories, if you will. Turns out that got ruined. Candy finally got on the board there, and Maley is on the board as well. So your overall thoughts on those three guys?
Nate Martini's a good hitter, man. Clutch is so overrated, but man, he's had a lot of really, really big hits for this team in his like 4 months, 3 months on the team. Nice to see Candelario. He also had a walk today, so he was on base twice. That pitch that he hit out of the ballpark, he put a really good swing on it. The ball was coming into him, took it the other or pulled it out. And then Luke Maley had an incredible spring. Had another good day at the plate today. Home run, also had that walk that kept the game alive in the ninth as well. So, you know, good offensive days from those guys. Reds put up 6 runs today. Just unfortunately wasn't enough.
Yeah. Tough. I mean, it's a tough day. Let's just face it. It was a tough day at the ballyard. That's exactly what it was.
Well, some better news for the Reds organization. Louisville Bats, they started off 2-0 this season. They won 4-3 over the Indianapolis Indians. That's the Pittsburgh Pirates affiliate. And the Bats won this game on a walk-off home run from catcher Michael Trotwine, a guy who might be number one in the catching depth in the minor leagues. If there were Reds need a catcher at some point this year, I think Trotwine's definitely got a chance of playing in the big leagues. Well, Rhys Hines, he homered again. That's 2 home runs in 2 days to start the season for him. He also walked in this game. So another good day for Rhys Hines, who is a guy that I think also might, I think he has a really good chance of playing in the big leagues. Talked with Bryce Spalding about that on yesterday's podcast. But Rhys Hines is a guy that I think is definitely got to watch. Guy definitely, when I looked at the lineup on Saturday for the Reds, thought, yeah, he could have really helped this lineup against a left-handed pitcher. Other notables, Blake Dunn was 0 for 4 with a strikeout. Jacob Herdeby's 1 for 3 with a walk. Of course, Michael Trotwine hit the home run. Mike Ford, he was 0 for 4 in this one. The Bats were actually going up against none other than Paul Skeens. He was absolutely dominant for the first couple innings. Reds did all their damage against the other Indianapolis Indians pitchers. But on the Reds side, Lyon Richardson getting a chance to try to match Paul Skeens. Pitched really well, 5 innings, 3 hits, didn't allow any runs. Did walk 3 batters, but struck out 4. So a solid start from Lyon Richardson, who just is another guy to really help provide some depth for the Reds pitching down in the minor leagues. All right, well, the Reds will play the rubber game against the Washington Nationals at 1:40 on Sunday. That'll be on, of course, Bally Sports Ohio. It'll be Nick Martinez going up against Jake Irvin. Nick Martinez making his Reds debut. He had a great spring. Officially, he had a 3.12 ERA, but the 4 perfect innings that he threw against the Dodgers actually didn't count towards his official stats because the game got canceled because of rain. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Martinez, seeing what he can do as a starter on Sunday. Martinez has a career 2.35 ERA in 7 games against the Nationals. Eddie Rosario is the only hitter that has saw Martinez a lot. Rosario is just 2 for 14, does have 1 home run. Lane Thomas, 0 for 5 against Martinez. And those are the only 2 batters with more than 3 at-bats. Jake Irvin be the guy going for the Nationals. He was a 4th-round draft pick back in 2018. Missed all of 2021 with Tommy John surgery, but he moved through high A, double A, and triple A in short order in 2022 and early 2023. Made his MLB debut in May 2023, and then he went. He had a 4.61 ERA over 24 starts last year with the Nationals. Peripheral numbers didn't like him as much. His FIP, XFIP, and XERA all north of 5. But he did have a really solid spring for the Nationals, 3.58 ERA in 18 and two-thirds innings pitched. But in fact, his last four starts of spring, they were just outstanding. He didn't allow a single run over 15 innings pitched over his last four starts. Only got four hits, only walked two batters, and struck out 13. So he's certainly coming into the 2024 season with a little bit of confidence. Irvin had a 5.23 ERA against the Reds in two starts last year. Gave up three home runs to the Reds, but two of those were to Joey Votto. The other one was to TJ Friedl. Eli De La Cruz is 2-for-6. No one else has more than three at-bats, so I don't think anyone's actually faced him twice last year. I think most guys only played in one game against him. The Reds, of course, had a pretty shuffling roster last season. Well, thanks so much, as always, for listening to Chatterbox Reds. Appreciate all the support. Make sure you're subscribed to Chatterbox Reds wherever you listen to this podcast. New podcast of the morning after every single game, all season long. Also, be sure to subscribe on YouTube, Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. Live post-game shows on there, so be sure to subscribe there. And I just saw a 5-star review that someone left yesterday. Really appreciate that. Left some really kind words, so really do appreciate that. If you haven't left a 5-star review, make sure you do that. That stuff really does help us out. But more importantly, tell a friend about Chatterbox Reds. If you know a Reds fan, tell them, hey, check out this Reds podcast, Chatterbox Reds. They do this every single day, which is crazy. But let them know, and hopefully they will enjoy what we do here at Chatterbox Reds. Well, we will be live on YouTube at 9 p.m. on Sunday night, with it being Easter. Not going to do a post-game show right after the game. Spend some time with our family, but we'll catch up on the game, and we'll be live at 9 p.m. to talk about it. And then, of course, it will be in your podcast feed, as always, on Monday morning. Well, hope that you have a happy Easter. Have a great Sunday. We'll talk again soon. Go Reds.